Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is one of the premier flute players in the United States, Ed Cox, chairman of the New York State Republican Party. Welcome back, Ed.
Oh, Alan, I hear you're one of the premier trumpet players in New York State.
Well, I gave up the trumpet years ago for the banjo, and I'm just as bad on the banjo as I was on the trumpet. Okay, let's ask about Donald Trump. Now, how would you describe Donald Trump's, a New Yorker, effect on New York? Because most of the people I keep meeting don't like him. What are you seeing? Do you think he's positive for New York or negative?
Well, when you talk to the working men and women of New York State, they know what he's about. He's a realist. He's a problem solver. And that's why they hired him to be president of the United States. And it's not just in New York. But it was across western Pennsylvania, northern Ohio, eastern Michigan, eastern Wisconsin, Iowa, especially in those areas that had been hit hard, and the jobs had been hit hard. Yeah, people are still doing work, but it wasn't the kind of meaningful work that they or their parents had before. And he made a special connection with the working men and women of this country that won him the Republican nomination and won him the president of the United States, and he's going to be working for them as president.
What do you make of his stance on immigration? You know, there are a lot of people of Hispanic descent, others in New York City, for example. Those jobs are being done quite frequently by people. Americans don't want to do them. What do you make of the fact that there's going to be a real crisis if everybody flees either Canada or goes back to Mexico or doesn't get let in? What happens then?
Well, that's not happening to be, first of all. I have not seen that kind of change happen in New York State. He has just made the point that legal immigration is fine. Illegal immigration is illegal, period. And as far as enforcing that law, and by the way, with respect to deportations, President Obama set a record on deportations the way he did it. But President Trump has focused on the criminal elements, the gangs, the people who are the illegal immigrants who are really deserved to be either locked up for a long time or deported.
Well, we keep hearing about people who were not guilty of great crimes, who were arrested where their children were here and they were following the rules. In one case, at least, they had to reverse themselves. But isn't that a dangerous thing to have happening?
Well, look, the same thing happened with President Obama with a large number of deportations he did. It's just that the media didn't focus on it the way, because Donald Trump did focus on illegal immigration and its consequences for the country. And when things come to the attention of the ICE officials, they have to do their duty and enforce the law. Now, if the laws have to be changed, and actually President Trump has said we need to change the laws and we have to focus on immigration on a meritorious basis the way it's done in Canada and other places. So, and with the right focus, maybe we can get the laws changed so that they, in fact, do work. There was a chance to reform in some years ago when President Obama was a senator and he was asked to join in it, not only did he not join in the reform, but he subverted it purposely, put poison pills into it, because he didn't want a coalition that included Republicans to get credit for it. So there's a lot of blame to go around with respect to our laws concerning immigrants. In the end, illegal's illegal. And when an official is supposed to enforce the law runs into a situation that's in front of his face, he has to go ahead and enforce the law.
Ed Cox, what do you make of the persistent hate crimes, anti-Semitism, other things that we're seeing in the country? You know, I personally think that it's a very dangerous thing. And I'm wondering, in New York State especially, with a fairly large Jewish population, what you make of it?
Oh, despicable. I mean, of course. But this always has been a national issue, one we always pay attention to. We always go after the minute it raises its ugly head. But we will take care of that. That's the way it works with the media raising it and with the political focus on it, particularly here in New York State and particularly in New York City. There is a bigger issue that's out there with respect to Israel. As you know, my father-in-law, President Nixon, saved Israel in the Yom Kippur War. I mean, Israel was flat on its back, and the game was almost over, and the President of the United States overruled Henry Kissinger and Defense Secretary Schlesinger and said, "I don't care what it is. If it flies, fill it with equipment and get it there." And Israelis still remember that great moment. It saved Israel. But now, subsequently, also save face for Sadat, we were on both sides. The Russians were out. We were in. It led to Camp David under Carter. It led to Oslo I, Oslo II, December of 2000, when Clinton made a last attempt. Ehud Barak gave up more than he ever should have. Oh, Arafat couldn't accept it. But that whole thing was said in that short period of a couple of weeks, and the diplomacy that President Nixon did that kept the Russians out. Now the Soviets are out. Now the Russians are back in. Hezbollah on one end, Hamas on the other, a hostile Syria with Russians back in the Mideast. Israel has never been in a more perilous moment than it is now. It has never needed the support of the United States more than it goes back to the Yom Kippur, the support that President Nixon gave it to it then. It needed. President Obama was not giving Israel that support. President Trump is giving that Israel support, and it is important at this point for Israel's very survival.
Let me talk to you a little bit, Ed Cox, about the health care crisis in the United States. The president has come up with a health care package along with Mr. Ryan in the Congress. There's a lot of criticism of it, as you know. The medical community seems really upset about it. And you?
I can't say that I'm an expert on my profession is that of a corporate and finance lawyer, so I can't say that I am an expert with respect to Medicare. However, I do know this, that Obamacare, the way it was put together and crammed down Americans' throat without really it was opposed by a number of Democrats, not just Republicans. And Obama, in order to get it passed, remember the Cornhusker kickback to get the Democratic senator from Nebraska on board, or the Louisiana Purchase, they call it, to get the Democratic senator from Louisiana board. I mean, 34 Democrats voted against it. It was a problem from the start. Very artificial, didn't work, and it was on its last legs as it was. Premiums were going sky high. Deductibles were going up, and the people didn't have the choice of their doctor. They didn't have the choice. They couldn't keep their insurance policy as promised, and it was in bad shape. It was on its last legs. So what you see is very well-thought-out legislation to repeal and replace Obamacare that comes out of the House of Representatives, where it has been well worked over. It is out there to be marked up as a bill. Everyone can read it. Everyone can look at it. Everyone can get their oar in it. It is going to increase health savings accounts so people can make tax-deductible contributions towards their
Hey, Ed, poor people can't have health care savings accounts. That's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, where are they going to find the money to have a health care savings account?
They have a thing. Poor people have Medicaid, Alan, and it's always been there.
Yeah, but
Medicaid's always been there. So that's not eliminated by this. You're talking about a different population here. Most people get their health care through their employers, and for their employers, it is deductible, so this is the historic system. We're talking about another portion of the population that are not on Medicare, that are not on Medicaid, but have to get their own health insurance. And when you have a health savings account, you have deductibility, and that puts you in the same situation as the big corporations. That makes sense. It also permits these individuals to get the kind of insurance they want, the insurance that fits their needs, rather than one size fits all the way the Obamacare worked. And that is the purpose of it, put it back in the hands of individuals, their own health care back in their hands, so they can get the kind of health care that they need, the kind of doctor they need, the kind of insurance plan they need.
First of all, I take some caution with what you said about, you know, Obamacare being crammed down Americans. It took a year. This is taking 2 weeks, and nobody's seen it, and there isn't even a fiscal note on it from the Congressional Budget Office to see how much it's going to cost. What's the rush?
No, it's no. Alan, come on. All the Democrats in Congress, what are you doing? You're doing nothing about Obamacare. You were getting look, this is the start of a process. It's going to take some time. And by the way, this part that we're talking about is of repealing and replacing Obamacare relies on a process called reconciliation, which attaches certain portions of it to the budgetary process. I'm getting into the weeds here because this I do know. There are two reconciliations this year because we're doing two budgets this year. One is going to be used with Obamacare, and the other is going to be used with respect to the all-important tax reform that is going to have a major impact on bringing dollars from abroad, trillions back to the United States to get our jumpstart our economy, and to get the animal spirits going again in the business community so that jobs expand rather than the anemic 1.5-2%, get it up to where it should be, 4-5% as we're repairing the damage of the Great Recession way back when. So the point I'm making is that this is just the start of a long process. Part of Obamacare will be repaired with respect to the reconciliation process. The others has to go through the normal process where you need 60 votes in the Senate. That's going to be a lot harder to get. So this is a long process. This is started, but it's being done openly. The bill's being marked up. Everyone's going to get a say on it, and it will take time to get the whole process done.
Ed Cox, let's go to New York State now, where we'll go away from Trump. We'll go to New York State. I have a feeling we'll hear about Trump again. But I wanted to ask you about a Cuomo official has said a pay raise for the legislature would be untenable without an on-time budget. Now, in the past, Cuomo seems to have been trading ethics reform for a pay raise. Now it's an on-time budget. Is this some kind of plot among the Democrats and the Republicans because they're mad at them for not giving a pay raise that they're not going to have an on-time budget?
What they are mad at him for is, in essence, having his people veto a commission that was set up to do a reasonable pay raise and to put this in front of the legislature and the governor and say, this is what we as independent judges deem to be a reasonable pay raise since the last one happened in 1998. He interrupted that. The governor interrupted that whole process, vetoed it, even though it had been agreed upon by him, too, so that he could have – he's a political thug, Alan, and he wanted the power in his hands. So he could say to them, you give me these pieces of legislation that make me look good, and then I will give you your pay raise. And the legislature said no and got so upset, the Democrats in the assembly, at the way he handled it, were ready to walk out of his state of the state. So he said, oh, I'm going to go out and talk to the people. I'm going to give these six state of the states all around. The point I'm making is his political judgment is way off. The wheels are coming off this administration, and he has made bad decision after bad decision with respect to the rollout of the budget, the way he did that. And you can expect a very rocky ongoing governance by this governor, because he has really lost his way, in part because 9 of his closest associates have been indicted because of the way he handled $9 billion of economic development funds. And a lot of his close associates took advantage of it to take, frankly, bribes. That's what the indictments say, including his quote-unquote brother, who he called his third brother in his family, Joe Percoco. And he knows that the feds are squeezing these people to testify about him and his involvement in the things that they were indicted for. And that has just put him in a position where his administration and his acting as a political thug governor, the wheels are just coming off his administration, and his judgments about what's good for the people of New York State have just gone way out of kilter.
So are you saying that based on the potential for dramatic things happening in the trial, that could be the end of Andrew Cuomo as a politician?
The end has already happened for Andrew Cuomo. He has stayed on too long.
Well, his numbers
are up. He's going for a fourth Democratic term. The trials of his closest associates will be going forward for the next year and a half. He will have to, as he said, he's probably have to testify in some of these trials. Because he is a political thug, he lost his way in the 2014 election as he tried to, in effect, dole out economic development funds to help his reelection, to do the Startup New York ads, these wonderful ads, $53 million, oh, things are great in New York and this and that, and they're supposed to create jobs for New York and this so-called tax-free program that he advertised all around. Well, only put $53 million for 400 jobs as controller, DeNapolis, a Democrat, report showed on it. And so, oh, no, I'm going to change the name of it. It's no longer Startup New York. It's Excelsior Program. Don't look at it. Don't call it Startup New York. That's a bad program. This is not. It's the same program. It failed. Yeah. It was just supposed to promote his reelection. And it's the same with economic development funds that he misused. These projects are failing all across the state, even some of the ones that Alan Kalliaros was involved in, because he's one of the indictees that he held together. One of the consortiums in Albany is now falling apart. The nanotech industry that had been created, partially started by his father, really promoted by Senator Bruno and Governor Pataki, and then kept growing, it's beginning to fall apart because of the bad political things that he did just to promote his political ambition. So, no, I think his tenure as governor is over. In the 2018 elections, we're going to be electing a Republican governor.
Okay, so that leads me to the next question. More and more people are talking about Preet Bharara becoming a candidate. Now, when I've talked to you in the past, let's face facts. When I've talked to you in the past, and you say, who you got, you come up with these names so that, in my opinion, don't have much of a chance. Could you convince a Preet Bharara, who, after all, has just been reappointed by a Republican president, to run on the Republican ticket?
No. He is a Democrat. He was counsel to Schumer. And he has said, he just recently said it, no, that my job is, and I love this job, of being the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. That is the most prestigious prosecutor's job, federal or otherwise, in the United States. And he is making the most of it to clean up New York State and New York City's politics. By the way, Mayor de Blasio in New York, the big event here is going to be the indictments that will be coming down from the two grand juries that are now sitting that will pass down indictments soon. One, of course, is a Manhattan DA, Morgenthau's old job. Again, very prestigious. Cy Vance is now heading up the, that, and that grand jury is considering state criminal charges against the mayor's people, and maybe against the mayor himself. Well, Preet Bharara is doing the federal, his grand jury is doing the federal charges against Mayor de Blasio's top staff and maybe even the mayor himself. So what Preet Bharara is doing is a major service to the state and to the city as far as getting corruption out of our politics. And that's why President Trump reappointed him immediately, and he loves that job, and he is doing a great service to the people of the state and of New York City by what he's doing.
So who you got to run for governor? Don't tell me Rob Astorino. Don't tell me Rob Astorino gets a message.
Well, he's clearly, I think he'd be very interested. By the way, given the fact he is outspent 10-1, and given the fact that $50 million of government funds were, in fact, used against him in these startup New York ads, given the fact that Governor Cuomo was doling out $9 billion of economic development funds to help his campaign, all that, he still won outside of New York City 49-46, but you know, when you only have $4 million and the governor's got $44 million, you cannot compete in the New York City media market. You only got 18% here. Look, he is still, I would say he should be thinking of running. He is now running for a third term to be county exec.
Wait, you're talking about it. You're talking about, just so our listeners won't get you confused, now you're talking about Astorino, right? Running.
I'm talking about Rob Astorino, exactly. But,
right.
You know, the majority leader of the state senator, John Flanagan, has said that he's interested in running for governor. And there's also Harry Wilson, who made a great race for controller in 2010. And he is interested in running for governor. And look, businessmen who are, in essence, outsiders to the political system, who have some political experience, like Harry running for controller, people like that won the governorships in blue states like 2 years ago in Illinois. That was now Governor Rauner. Charlie Baker won in Massachusetts. He's governor of Massachusetts, and Larry Hogan at Blue State, Maryland, very blue state. Larry Hogan, a Republican, is chairman there. No, all three are good potential candidates for governor, and all three are working through the process that they need to in their particular position to be the candidate of the party. But we're going to have a winning race in 2018. I'll guarantee that.
Okay, but very quickly, why is Cuomo's numbers going up, not down, if everything you say is true?
He just unleashed a whole bunch of feel-good ads about New York State and those kinds of things, and there will be ups and downs in that. But the race hasn't started yet. Wait till the trials of these nine of his closest associates start happening, and the corruption will continue. And there will be investigations by a number of you, not just the prosecutors, but also by even the Democrats in the Assembly are doing investigations of the huge potentially criminal mistakes that he made in implementing his programs.
We are out of time. I love having Ed Cox, Republican state chairman, on with us, and I do love having you here.
Alan, it's always my pleasure with you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.